Kendra, is where they make their mark.
This is the time where you've got to turn the table. You've got to take advantage and ride this wave in this momentum.
A goal from your man! Catch them if you can!
Hello there, and welcome to the Match Preview Podcast. As always, Callum Williams alongside former Minnesota soccer star Kendra D. St. Aubin. Big show planned for you today. I know usually we have somebody from the opposition, but that wasn't able to be achieved today. So we will later on be hearing from Ja'Cory Hayes, who I think it's safe to say will give us just as good an insight as any to Minnesota's opponents, FC Dallas, this coming weekend. So before we get started, Kendra, 2.5 weeks. I haven't seen you. How's things?
Yeah, I know. It seems kind of crazy to have this kind of a break in the middle of the season. And not that we haven't experienced this before when we had the World Cup and we've had other international breaks. But, and you know what? Quite honestly, we should be used to this by now. After COVID, after the pandemic and the stops and starts and the wonkiness, I feel like it would have felt weirder if we had had a straight season with no breaks.
Yeah, it's still weird though, isn't it? It's still straight. I must admit, I know MLS isn't the only league that does this, but it is very, very strange. I'm a big proponent of whenever the national team is playing, that country should take a break because all focus has to be on the national team. And I know, you know, the US have stopped playing now. They qualified through the Nations League and what have you, but it's still bizarre. And I think at times MLS does suffer from this because now there's an abundance of exceptional players that are going to miss a handful of MLS games. And surely that can't be what the league wants.
Yeah, and you know, that's always been the debate, at least of more recent years, of getting on the same calendar as other leagues around the world. And for the United States, and I shouldn't say that, for North America, it doesn't necessarily jive with the climate and with everything else, you know, to try to get the calendars different. But we'll see. I mean, who knows? I mean, times are changing, but as more and more quality players are going away on international duty and it's a break for other leagues and not a break for MLS, they might start to change their mind because as the league continues to attract more international players and more national team level players, you're right. You don't want the games and the quality of the games to suffer when you return. There's depth of squad on every roster now, but not when you're missing your top three or four players for every roster. You don't want that to be the case. You want to have the best team out there, not just for the teams and the clubs in the season, but also for the fan base that pays good money to see these guys.
Not a debate I was intending on having today, Kate, but you
want to talk about relegation too?
No. I'll save that for another day. You brought this up, so I'm blaming you. International calendar. Where are you on the whole debate of MLS should switch its season up to align with Europe and other leagues around the world?
I would be a proponent of it. But I do think that it's got to be for the right reasons. And I think it would really depend on how MLS would position it, how it would go down with the players, how it would fit with the rest of the things this league in this country, in North America, I should say, again, you know, tries to do things. If you had your druthers, how would it line up? When would it start? When would it stop? How would it go? Would it go exactly like the European calendar? Or you know, what would you see?
I'm sort of with you in terms of if it was done the right way, I would be a proponent for it. But I just, there's so many things to figure out, aren't there? I mean, you cannot have a regular season game in Minnesota in late January. You just can't do it. With an outdoor stadium, you can't do it. And the same could more than likely be said. And I know that there are examples of the opposite, for example, this coming weekend when Minnesota play Dallas. I have no idea what the temperature is, but I'm sure it's going to be unbearable. So there are ways around it, I'm sure. I know the individuals who are figuring out the World Cup in Qatar, because of the obscene humidity there, they are figuring out, I don't have details here with me, but from all the reports I've seen, air-conditioned stadiums help. Now, that's all good and well, but that costs millions and millions of dollars, and you've got to have investors that want to do that. So I think there's an argument there for it, but there would just have to be so much that would work in favour of Major League Soccer.
And to your point about playing in late January, I mean, at least when it's hot and humid, the ball still rolls appropriately. Mm. when there's, if there's 6 inches or 2 feet of snow on the ground and it's a blizzard, as we saw the opening game at TCF Bank Stadium in 2017, you know, it's not really a proper soccer game. You know, I it's not the same. Even football is different. They play in late January outside and in cold weather stadiums in New England and other places. But football is different. You know, you're not expecting the ball to roll on the ground. I've played soccer games in the snow in the Big Ten, and it ends up looking like Saturn with a giant ring around it, and it stops after three revolutions, you know? So you still, the quality of the actual game is what's most important, and you want to see good soccer. And so that's, to me, what would be the possible hindrance of trying to line up with the other calendars of the other leagues.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And the counter argument to it is people would say, well, you know, you can play, Minnesota can play, you know, three or four games down south then, you know, and well, okay, but is that not a competitive advantage then to the teams that play in Texas and Florida and what have you, you know? So there's a reason why we aren't in these conversations. And there's a reason why we're broadcasters, because we don't have all the answers. But anyway, look, in terms of weather, there is no doubt this weekend at FC Dallas, when we are in the summer, there's going to be an issue. How do you as a player, Kay, how do you prepare psychologically, but more important, physically? How do you prepare for a game like this? And say, for example, you're 10, 15 minutes in the game. I'm sure you've been in this situation before. And the heat is burning. It's coming down on you. You're sweating. You're thinking, my energy's all gone. And you look up at the clock and you see there's 12 minutes gone. How do you deal with that?
You know, it's interesting that you said that, because this stretch of heat that we've had in Minnesota is like record breaking, right? Over 90 degrees, the humidity, some days the heat index is over 100. And even if there wasn't as much humidity, it's still been hot. And Adrian Heath joked earlier this week in his media availability that the weather they've had has been preparing them for Dallas. But we've also seen stretches of heat before and then the club go down and just not look like they were ready for it. And look, it's one of those things that's very difficult. It's hard to play in. As a player, I used to think, you know, once you get out there and you're running around, you don't notice it as much until all of a sudden you maybe start making poor decisions. That was always the thing I noticed the first, because you literally do start to wilt a little bit in the sense of like the mental sharpness. And the physical sharpness of the actual touches, the plays, the decision-making on the pitch in tight moments, in tight spaces, playing quickly, everything just seems to slow down a little bit. And if you haven't properly hydrated and you haven't properly rested and stayed in air conditioning, and I can understand also why teams limit their warm-ups when they go to Dallas and Houston and Orlando, for exactly in Austin now. I mean, we saw last night, we're recording this on a Thursday, the women's national team playing in Austin and they had hydration breaks. It's hot and humid. So I think, you know, you can only do what you can physically ahead of time to prepare. And once you get out there, the thing I struggled with was when you would stop and stand still, you would realize how flaming hot you were, and your decision-making and your movements off the ball and your sharpness, that's what started to suffer most. And you really have to lock in on the concentration. And to your point, I think we talked about this before, Minnesota's never won there. There's a lot of teams that have probably never won in Dallas, maybe come away with a draw, because it is just a different animal dealing with that kind of heat, no matter how much you train in it.
Talking of the Austin situation, did you watch the game last night?
I did watch the game last night.
What did you think? Because I thought the Mewis sisters in midfield was sensational.
Yeah, I'm so happy that, you know, Christy Mewis is back in the mix. She was out of the fold for, what was it, like almost 6 years or something. You know, to come back in at that level and perform, and that is such a tight group to try to bust into. I mean, they're down to the wire now picking their Olympic squad, and there's only a couple spots open. And there's not a bad choice in that 30 players that they probably bring into camp every year or every summer. So, I thought first of all, they should have done better against Nigeria. But Nigeria is tough. I mean, they are just one of those teams that are going to scrap and claw. They're physical. They're not afraid to go in on a hard tackle. And I thought at times the U.S. maybe looked a little, not lax isn't the word, but expecting to be able to do more easily against the Nigeria side that Hardy trading together, and Randy Waldrum is now their coach, and hardly had time with him as the coach, not even their first choice goalkeeper with the club, so, or with the country. So I don't know. I thought it was good. I mean, the U.S., you know, they just, they do what they do. they just win.
Yes, that's all they do. Talking of winning as well, whilst we're on the subject of international football, Robin Lourdes and Jukka Raitala obviously got themselves a win in the opening game of their tournament, Euro 2020, which obviously that particular match was overshadowed and quite rightly so by the horrendous events that Christian Eriksen and the Eriksen family had to go through. I can't believe the game was played just a few hours later. I can't believe the game was resumed rather a few hours later. I think as a Finland player, I know I certainly would have felt a little uncomfortable with it, because there were shots, Kay, when we were watching it. There were shots when the game was resuming and the players were warming up. Some of the Danish players that were still crying. That's something you can't even think of dealing with something like that.
Yeah, and I know that they voted or came to a consensus or whatever it was to resume the game. But I think that the decision should have just been taken out of their hands. I think the tournament, you know, and those that have the powers that be should have just said, we are not resuming this game tonight. And I understand the intentions, you know, oh, let's do this for Christian, let's play for Christian. But the emotions are so raw, and you experience something like that firsthand. I have never experienced anything like that firsthand, from even just as a spectator or a teammate or anything. But you've heard other stories. This has happened to other athletes in different sports where someone has collapsed or even just had a bad injury. You know, we've seen in the NFL and the NHL where a guy goes down and they're stretchered off and they're not moving their limbs, and, you know, they're probably paralyzed. Like, how do you mentally wrap your brain around that and get it together? And I think it was an unfair ask to put it on the players. To your point, though, about just Robin and Jukka and Jan as well, and, you know, seeing Rasmus Schuler in the mix too with Finland, former Minnesota United player, I just love that they are representing their country. The excitement about the Euros for them and representing their country was so high going into last summer. Seeing them get to fulfill that dream and that aspect of their careers and their livelihoods and their soccer lives, I think is so fun to watch. Seeing them line up next to each other on the right-hand side was fun to watch. And I can only imagine, you know, the experience and the confidence and the energy they're going to bring when they come back from that tournament, whatever stage that's in, and play again for Minnesota United.
Yeah, it's going to be great, isn't it? And then finally, on the international football front, Dane St. Clair was given his Canadian debut against Aruba in a, let's say, a comfortable win. It was 7-0 for those unaware. Not entirely sure it was the most testing evening of his career, but nevertheless, he's got his first international cap, the first of many, we're assuming.
Yeah, and I think even just being in the mix again with the senior team, the training sessions, the environment, the travel, the experience, the pressure, you know, and then I know he didn't play in the matches, but against Haiti and the pressure that was on there for the Canadian men's national team and just being around that, I think that's something that's invaluable for Dane St. Clair. And I think, you know, it's a little bit of a tricky spot for him right now because he's not playing with his club currently because Tyler Miller has stepped in and done so well. So we'll see how that goes, you know, as the season continues on. I mean, what a blessing and a privilege for Adrian Heath and staff to have two quality starting goalkeepers like that. But for Dane, I think what a fantastic experience for him. And I don't even know if he faced a shot in that game, but the whole mood of it, the warming up, the preparation, the planning, going into a match, knowing you're the starter for the men's national team, getting a cap, all those things are just, you know, invaluable for a young player like Dane.
Yeah, it's going to be really, really intriguing to see his growth over the course of the next 6 months or so. Okay, let's get back on track, shall we? Sorry, I got distracted by international football, as I have done over the last couple of weeks, really, let's be honest. Exactly, yes. As we're recording this, I'm watching the Copa America here to my left as well, so apologies.
Is that Colombia, Venezuela?
It is indeed, yes.
That's what I have on my TV, too.
There we go. International football, as far as the eye can see. I love it. Do you know, actually, I said this the other day on the other podcast that we did. I actually think this time zone and this part of the world is the best place to watch football because you've got it literally all day. With the Euros at games at 8 in the morning, 11 in the morning, 2 in the afternoon, going through the group stages. Now the Copa America, 4 p.m. And 8 p.m. And sometimes there's been a 6 p.m. game in there as well. It's sensational. I love the fact there's so much football on TV in this country. There's more football on TV in North America than anywhere else, I think. And it's wonderful. It's great for the game.
Isn't it like the most frustrating thing now when you can't find a game? Because it rarely happens anymore. You know what I'm saying? Like, it rarely happens. So there's times where I'm scrambling, like, okay, is it on the CBS? Is it on the ESPN app? Is it on FS1, TUDN? Like, all these places, NBC, all these places now that you can get football, that you can get soccer. And it's just like, I just go to my remote and I just say, soccer. wait for it to pop up. And so it is, it's like frustrating when it doesn't show up because it just never happens anymore. So, I mean, what a crazy time. And now we're going into the Olympics and then, you know, World Cup. I mean, it's just this
gold
next
cup
couple
as well.
Years. Oh, gold cup. That's right. I mean, this is so much fun stuff.
It's fabulous. Isn't
and
it?
MLS. And
MLS, right. Exactly. So here we go then. Fine, let's get back to it, shall we? Again, that's my fault. I'm sorry. Minnesota on the road to Dallas. Again, it's difficult. We've already spoken about the Heat. We've spoken about the fact that Minnesota have never won there. Very few people have won at FC Dallas. So how do they win? How do they get a result at FC Dallas? Do you expect any sort of difference in terms of approach? We're assuming Reynoso may very well be available for Akpane as well. What should we expect from the approach?
You know, it's a tricky one because they are missing such key players from international duty. Now, the bonus is that the only real player out of those that are missing, well, I shouldn't say the only, Jan Grigosh, clearly, and also Robin Lund, but Yuka could be in and out of the lineup in the back line. Dane hadn't been playing. So really, realistically, it's two players that are out of the mix from a starting standpoint for Adrian Heath. And how much have we talked about the quality of depth heading into this season? And now on top of that, you add Franco Fragopane and Adrian Anu into the fold, and Avila, you know, who's also a number nine. So there's some depth there that Minnesota United has gained over the last month or so. So I think that if I'm looking ahead to this match, and I just want to think that at some point you have to win at Dallas. And I'm not just saying you as a Minnesota United. I'm saying team, this can't go on forever. At some point you have to go in there with some sort of a swagger and an energy. This is a battle for the bottom dwellers. And I only say that because that's where they're currently at the standings. That does not mean that I truly believe that these two teams belong anywhere near that spot based on their talent in the roster. I do think that both these teams are going to end up well above, or at least in the playoff picture for sure for Minnesota United, but Dallas might creep over it. So I think that this is a time for Adrian Heath to lean on that depth, to lean on that quality of the roster, to lean on some of these guys to step up in these times where these international guys are probably going to be gone at least for another week, depending on how their teams do, if not longer. And I think it's important for those new players they are literally going to be thrown into the fire in Dallas. And fortunately, they've been thrown into the fire in Minnesota with a 90-degree heat. But I am pumped to see Franco Fragopane. I think I was bummed that we didn't see him at Real Salt Lake, knowing that we were going to have to wait 3 weeks to see him in action. Yeah. So many exciting things coming, you know, from the club, from the coaching staff, and even just you and I being at training of what he's capable of doing, his dynamic play on the wing, but cutting inside and creating. Is there anyone better that Emmanuel Reynoso likes to play with than a player that is skillful and technical and can cut inside and help him create and advance the attack, as we saw with Kevin Molino and Reynoso and the magic they made? So I think these are good things. This is a positive thing. And I think that Minnesota United absolutely could go down to Dallas and get a victory this weekend, coming off a couple weeks of rest, training in the heat and being ready and fit and capable of it.
Yeah, really, really interested to see what happens. Before we go to break, and remember, stick around, because after the break, we'll be speaking to Ja'Cory Hayes all about FC Dallas and his career there before joining Minnesota United. I'll give him what I think is going to be the starting 11K, and then I'd love to get your thoughts. And this is, bear in mind, we're recording this on Thursday. We haven't seen, we sort of glimpse of training, but we haven't seen too much. I'm assuming it's going to be Miller and goal. The back line will be Metanier, Boxall, DiBassi, Gasper. I think the two sitting midfielders will be Trapp and Dotson, although Dotson will play in his more comfortable role as an eight. I think it'll be Hansen on the right. If he's fit, Reynoso in the 10 with Fragopane on the left, and then Unu up front. I'm assuming you're similar in thoughts.
I agree with you 100%. And the only question mark would be Reynoso and what he's able to do and how Adrian feels about bringing him back. But I think that's a lineup. That's crazy. I mean, think about the lineup that you just said. And that's without the guys that are missing for international duty. And I think that is something that Minnesota United fans have to be really excited about, because that is a stellar quality lineup to be able to throw out there on the road without your international guys that are gone with their national teams. I think that's something and a huge reason to be excited for the second half of this season. Are we even at the half? We're not even close to half. the last two thirds of the season when we come back and I mean, we have a game every, you know, 3 days or whatever that is. So I agree with you 100%. I hope Reynoso is fit and healthy and ready to go, because I want to see him with Adrian Anu. I want to see him with Franco Fagapane and Nico Hansen, to be fair. So much energy that he can bring on the wing, and also the ability to cut inside and get to the end line, and a little bit more multidimensional than maybe what you get from an Ethan Finley on the wing. But again, options, options, options. And this is good stuff. This is good things for Adrian Heath and Minnesota United.
Looking forward to it. Minnesota United on the road against FC Dallas on Saturday evening. Stay with us. Next up on the Match Preview podcast, we'll talk to former FC Dallas and now Minnesota United midfielder, Jacory Hayes. Minnesota United fans, download the Great Clips app to keep your hair game ready all year long. Great Clips, it's gonna be great. And a very warm welcome back to the Match Preview podcast. Callum Williams alongside former golfer soccer star Kindra D. St. Albin, as always. Minnesota United then back in action, as we said earlier on this weekend, on Saturday evening against FC Dallas. So we thought the person that perhaps has the most insight to FC Dallas that's available to us anyway, former FC Dallas and now Minnesota United midfielder, Jacory Hayes joins us. Jacory, welcome to the podcast. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us. Really appreciate it. So before we dive into Dallas and what they could potentially pose against Minnesota this coming weekend, let's talk about the season so far from a Minnesota point of view. 2-4-1, what have you seen so far?
I mean, it's not the greatest of starts from us in terms of the season. But, you know, the last three games, I think we've shown well and gotten results. And, you know, we've had a couple weeks off in terms of games, but we've been training hard. And, you know, we're about to run into a thick spell of games this summer. So getting guys back, and, you know, there's some guys away with international duty, but, you know, once they come back, we'll have full strength squad in terms of everyone's available. But, you know, I think we're a team that's on the up, and I'm looking forward to the next couple games coming up.
Jacory, I remember when you came into Minnesota United and Adrian Heath just absolutely raving about your professionalism, your willingness to work, always be ready, stepping up at every opportunity given to you. This season, only the three games that you've played in thus far in 70 minutes, but always ready when you step on the pitch. What can you say that's like from you, you know, for you from a mentality standpoint, to always kind of have that mentality and that attitude bringing it to Minnesota United?
Yeah, it's something that I've had, you know, growing up my whole life, even through youth soccer, was just training hard and being ready for, you know, anything that could happen. It's nice that it's serving me well in the professional ranks. But, yeah, you don't know when you'll get your opportunity to play or when you'll be called upon. So you just have to always be ready. That was the biggest advice that I've gotten when I first got into the league, was always train ready, train hard, and just be ready to maximize your opportunity. So that's what I kind of live by, and you know, try to, you know, just be ready whenever.
Well, that's exactly what you did. You maximized the opportunity when you were drafted by FC Dallas back in 2017, Jacory. Take me back a few years. Let's talk about your time at FC Dallas, shall we? Of course, it was three seasons before the trade was made to Minnesota United. Obviously, Dallas have a reputation. I believe it's, what, 32 homegrown players. They lead the league in terms of developing their own. So, when someone like yourself, a young player, is drafted by them, surely you're thinking at that stage, there's no better place to be.
Yeah, it's difficult. When you go there, like, all right, perfect. They love young players. But is one of those, you weren't necessarily like a homegrown yourself. So it was like a weird vibe. Like, I was a young guy, but wasn't necessarily one of their own. But, you know, it was... I loved my time down there at Dallas. I had two different coaches while I was down there, and each of them I learned a lot from, and I grew as a player on and off the field while I was down there. So I wouldn't trade those experiences for anything.
What do you see as the benefits of play the kids? You know, that's like the mantra these days, it seems like, play the kids, with all these academies and these homegrowns and these youth development programs that are popping up all over the country. What do you see as the benefit of having those youngsters even training with you guys, with the senior team, and in the hopes that they'll get some minutes? What does that do for them and for you guys?
You know, the young ones, or young kids, it's hard to say that, but...
You're only 25, it's not like you're old.
I'm not trying to date myself, but, you know, they definitely bring, like, a new energy when you're around them, like, in the locker room, just joking around, just having so much fun. I just remember, like, they're just a great energy at training sessions. And, you know, they grew up with each other in the academy. So they have their little inside joke that they've had for years. That's the best way to put it, is just like a sense of energy that they bring to training sessions. And, you know, for Dallas to have so many homegrowns, you know, come through their ranks, you know, they had the picture that they posted with all the ones at the national team level. I think I had the opportunity to play with three of those guys, and, you know, they did well and they maximized their opportunities. It's not like, they were just kind of handed those things as homegrowns. You know, they truly deserved it. And, you know, they were playing not because of their homegrown or they were young. It was like they were good players. They've done a lot of good things down there.
It's really how the rest of the world does it, Jacory. It seems as though Major League Soccer, traditionally, I know things are changing now, but traditionally, they went down the collegiate routes. Is it the right way to go about things now, doing the youth system and developing your own?
I think each person still has their path. I don't think that necessarily every 16-year-old needs to be thrown into starting 11 and just kind of see how they go, sink or swim. You know, for some people, like, Jesus was that young, maybe 16, 17 when he got his debut. He's one route. Reggie Cannon went down one route where he did a semester at UCLA and then played. But even after his first year, he didn't play at all. It was not until his second season at Dallas that he got his minutes and his time to play. And then there's other players that, you know, like myself, who needed 4 years of college and then get into the professional ranks. There's a wide range of, you know, paths that players have to, you know, overcome in terms of, are you ready at 16, 17 years old? Do you need to go through a USL program, USL League One, get your reps there, or are you the college route? You know, I think there's paths for a lot of players. And I think as long as we keep strengthening each one of those avenues, we'll keep getting, you know, the best talent overall once, you know, guys are, you know, 21, 22. The real talent will come through.
How do you feel your role? Like, where do you see your role fitting in with the youngsters? You know, only being 25, but yet you've also, like you just said, did the 4 years of college, also playing with the homegrowns and the youngsters of FC Dallas, and now having gotten a lot of minutes early in your career. Where do you see your role? How do you define it when you're in a roster, in a team between the youngsters and kind of the veterans?
Yeah, I think that's, I'm just smack dab in the middle. You know, it's, I am still young, still a young one, not in terms of like veteran or experience, playing experience. But I have been around long enough where I'm not the rookie or the new kid on the block. So, you know, I just put my head down at work. I offer advice and talk to, you know, the younger guys if they ask me, or I tell them, hey, I saw this. Like, what'd you see? And I do the same with the veteran players on our team, the older guys. So not to say I'm like a bridge between the two, but, you know, I feel like I'm able to have conversations with both sets, the older players as well as the young ones, about, you know, what we see, even off the field, just like what's going on, like, you know, hanging out, stuff like that. But I'm just right dab in the middle.
Jacory, 21 of those 32 homegrown players developed by FC Dallas worked under the current head coach, Luchi Gonzalez. You were obviously at Dallas when Luchi Gonzalez took over. What was that transition like? Could you tell there was a prior relationship? And what was that like in the locker room? And how did it transition onto the field at that time?
It was definitely, it was 2019. Luchi was hired from the academy, but everyone knew him from the first team because he'd been around watching the training sessions. I think he was head of the academy before that and then coached the academy, an academy team my first year, actually. So everyone kind of knew who he was. There was always that integration between the first team and the academy team. I mean, there's times, there's a handful of academy players always training with us just for squad numbers, you know, just to glorified mannequins, essentially, just like moving pieces, which is kind of not disrespectful to say, but, you know, it's a great experience for them as a kid to come on and be like, yo, I'm playing with, at the time, you know, Mauro Diaz on the field, you know, Maxi Urruti's there, you know, you're playing with some big time players. And so there was always that integration between with Oscar Perea and then Lucci between the academy and the first team. And I guess it just further solidified that when you bring in a guy that was from your academy coaching staff to the first team. So, you know, still have the academy kids when we need extra numbers training with us in the summertime. They had, all the alumni from that were in college come back, and they were essentially an extra 11 aside team to scrimmage against. So all the academy kids that are getting signed now or, you know, just signed while we were there, it was one of those, we all knew them on the first team and spent some good time training with them. So it was a seamless transition for them to when they were actually signed to the first team.
Being in the league since 2017, it seems like even just in the last 3.5-4 years now, the league has changed so much, grown so much. And Cal asking about, you know, college players versus academy players and homegrowns, what direction are we going? And now there's such an influx of international talent and money being spent with the roster rules and owners just spending a lot of money and building stadiums. Where do you see this league going, and where have you seen it go in just the last 4 years when you've been a part of it?
Yeah, I mean, I just see it continuing to skyrocket, really. You know, it's something I talk about with friends. Like, you have to get better each year just to kind of keep up with the pace of the league and how they're bringing in new superstars or new young players that are signed that are incredible talents, you know. So it's for me personally, it's like I got to step up my game each and every season just to feel like I'm still competitive and, you know, able to do what I need to do on the field. But in terms of the league as a whole, I think it's incredible to see. Minnesota United was the brand new team when I was getting drafted. And now it's, you know, a team to be reckoned with in the Western Conference. And, you know, there's new teams being added next year and then the year after. So it is amazing to step back a little bit. And I haven't been in the league terribly too long, but, you know, it's grown so much since I've been in the league, and it's only going to continue.
You mentioned international stars. You're week in, week out, Jacori, playing alongside some of them, and some of them right now are at Euro 2020. Obviously, Dane St. Clair has plied his trade in the Nations League qualifying stages as well, in the CONCACAF region. How proud are you when you watch television and you see Robin Lourdes, you see Jukka Raitala, and you see Jan Gregus playing at the highest level? And what sort of experience do you think they will bring back that perhaps they can relate to some of the younger players?
It's very cool. You know, I cut on the TV and I see, you know, them playing against, you know, the world superstars. And it kind of closes the gap in terms of how far you think Europe is from here. Because, I mean, you watch Premier League all the time, or Bundesliga, La Liga, whatever the league is, and you see these superstars. And then you talk to Robin and he's played against them, traded jerseys with some of those guys. And it's like, oh man, like I train against Robin every day and he just played against those guys. Like, yeah, we're doing some good stuff here. Like, we're good players, you know? And so, you know, I hope young players that, you know, have the chance to go over to Europe can, you know, talk to these guys, you know, almost like measuring tape, like put yourself against them. Like, all right, I did well against them. Like, that means I can do well against, you know, the guys in Europe. And I think the league as a whole should be taking it in like that as well. It's just, you know, we send those guys to Euros and they do well. They're starters for their club, for their country. And, you know, I don't think we should feel like we're the little brother to Europe, really. I mean, we can, you know, compete with any of them.
Do you know what, Corey, I've done an abundance of interviews with people over the years of covering this league. And what you've just said is probably the most intelligent way and certainly the most articulate way of saying where MLS is at the moment, because there's still a stigma, for sure, no doubt. But when they come here, we saw Gonzalo Higuain say something to the press that was silly the other day. But it really is closing the gap, isn't it? And I think over the course of the last couple of years in particular, it does feel as though some of the bigger leagues in Europe, because in my opinion, Major League Soccer is better than a lot of other leagues in Europe, but it does feel as though MLS and some of those bigger leagues are starting to get closer and tighter together. You being the age of 25, you must be incredibly excited to know that maybe in 5 years' time, who knows where this league is going to be, and you're going to be a part of it.
Yeah, I'm really excited. And like, I don't want to put, you know, the buggy before the horse. I'm not saying like, let's put up us against Barcelona right now. Let's do it. But yeah, like you said, we are closing the gap. And I look at it, I have a little brother right now that's 14 and playing, you know, it's one of those, I want him to be in the MLS. And, you know, if I'm not able to, if the league doesn't get there by the time I'm finished playing, hopefully it's at that level when he needs it to be. So I'm just incredibly excited for like what the league's growth will be and continue to close the gap. I mean, I truly think it is closing year by year.
Yeah, it's really getting there, and really excited that we've got you a part of it here. Okay, so let's move on and talk about Minnesota United then, shall we? It's still a bit odd. The gap was, I think, significant over 2.5 weeks. As a player, how do you, not only from a physical point of view, but psychologically get through that, knowing you've got a fair bit of training to do before the next game?
It has been difficult not to play against someone else in this span. But it's we've had, you know, days off where we've gotten our mind off of soccer and almost hit a reset button, a little recharge. And then we've had a lot of hard training sessions to try to replicate that game fitness, that game intensity. And that's the best that you can do, is try to truly replicate it. You can't exactly get it perfect, but I think we've been training hard. You know, I said it earlier to some guys, but we've been able to like integrate some of the new players in right now without having 3 days of, you know, 3 games a week where you're not really training. You only have the game time to know what they actually do. So you get a little taste of what the new players can bring. And, you know, now we get to showcase it on Saturday and fine tune it throughout the summer before, you know, the last stretch of the season.
You talked about it in the beginning when we first started chatting about the slow start that Minnesota United got off to this season, not the start that the club wanted, but then you have 2 wins and a draw heading into this break. Did it feel like the break came at a good time, or it was a hindrance, or you would have rather kept that momentum going? Or as you said, a rest, a recharge, almost a second preseason, and getting those new guys kind of integrated into the club?
Yeah, I guess there's no real, I guess you would want to keep the ball rolling in terms of games, like you said, just like, all right, we're on the up, let's keep after this. But I think this break did come, you know, how it was supposed to, really. Like we got some new faces and they're assimilated into the team now. And now there's a stretch of games. So we have to put on the working boots on and get after it. We got games like every 3 days. And if there's no midweek game, it seems like a light week, really, in this summer stretch. So, I guess the rest did come at a good time because there's a lot of games coming up for us.
Yeah, I would get ready. It's going to be a very busy period, isn't it? Let's talk about some of those new players that have come in, Jacory. We love it when new players come in. It's always nice when there's fresh blood to talk about, isn't there? Myself and Kendra obviously get the chance to watch training a couple of times a week, but you're there on the field with some of these new players. Let's focus specifically on Franco Fragapane and Adrian Unu. What have you made of them so far?
I think they're high-level players. I don't want to give away too much. It's almost like a movie trailer preview you guys will see on Saturday. But, you know, I think they're good players. They'll elevate the team, help us, you know, building out the back in terms of, like, connecting players. And, you know, I'm excited to see what they're, what they'll do in the final third against other teams. I've seen what they do against our own defenders, our own players, but I'm excited to see what they do in against other MLS teams.
When you look again at the league and the quality and the players and the depth and what Minnesota United has brought in just in this first window, how important is that depth going to be? As you talked about, these games are going to come thick and fast. You still have players away for international duty. How important is it to have everybody just stepping up and the quality of that depth?
It's massive in terms of being able to rotate guys for the midweek game or on the weekend. But I think most importantly, just bringing that competitive bite in that fight at training sessions. You know, only 11 guys can start. You know, I've heard that phrase, unfortunately, only 11 guys to start. So it's, you know, there's going to be some tough decisions that need to be made. And, you know, our job as players is just make, you know, coaches' life miserable in terms of like, all right, who do I leave out? You know, I want to put this guy, I want to put this guy. Who do I sit out? So I think when you have a deep, deep roster like that, it just encourages intense training sessions and tough decisions for coach. And then ultimately it translates to on the weekend, you know, those are the best 11 guys from the week and they're in the best form. And hopefully that translates to wins on the weekend. So the deep roster is massive.
Corey, before we start talking about the actual game and actually do our jobs and do a match preview podcast here, sorry, we've gotten distracted of talking about football, shocker again. How do you see your trajectory and your career path? Because you mentioned some of the players earlier on that you've played alongside, like Richard Cannon, for example, going off to Portugal, and the way that FC Dallas have done things, selling off Brian Reynolds and obviously Justin Che is now back, but he's been on loan to Bayern München for the last 6 months. I think Kindra and I and the abundance of broadcasters we speak to and scouts and coaches and whatnot, I've all got the same opinion of you, is that you could play just about anywhere in the world. What is your goal? What do you want to do over the course of the next 5 years, let's say?
5 years? I have no idea. I'm taking it really day by day, season by season. But, you know, my goal has been the same for a few seasons, is just to be a week in and week out starter in the MLS. You know, hopefully that does translate in a few years to a move over to Europe. But I'm not necessarily focused too much on that. I just want to get better day by day and controlling the things that I can control. And that's how I train and, you know, keep trying to push to be in the starting lineups. And then once that happens, you know, Europe or future, you know, hopefully national team, all those things will take care of themselves. But right now, my first goal, that first stepping stone, is being a consistent starter in this league. And I think that's truly attainable for me. And once that happens, it's then I'll focus on the next step up that ladder.
I just have to ask you one more non-Minnesota United FC Dallas. Did you watch the USA-Mexico game? And if so, as you mentioned, the national team, I mean, what does that do for a player of your caliber watching something like that? How fired up were you watching it?
I watched the first half, and then it got close to my bedtime. So I made a business decision. I said, I got to be ready for work in the morning. I can't be messing around with these guys. But it was very cool to, you know, I saw, you know, Kellen Acosta, who was, you know, my good friend and roommate when I was in Dallas. I was so happy for him and how he played. Waking up in the morning, seeing that they won the game, I was, you know, a bit shocked, to be honest. I had to go back and watch the highlights to see, you know, what did I miss? Maybe I should have stayed up. I was honestly just really happy to see good friends win that game, and, you know, happy for their careers and, you know, the level that they're playing at. And that's the biggest thing. When I watch these national team games, I'm just so happy to see, like, my friends doing well.
Again, we mentioned it earlier, didn't we? Gaps closing. It's really, really coming for US soccer, in my opinion. Okay, so what about this weekend then, Jacori? Big game against FC Dallas. I say big game, I know it's early, but given the positioning of the two teams, not to go all stereotypical and cliche, but, you know, let's use the phrase basement battle and all that, just, you know, just for fun. It is a big game. It does have certain significance to it. Minnesota have never won in Dallas. You were a part of teams that beat Minnesota before at Toyota Stadium. Why is it so difficult to win in Dallas?
I mean, we have to address the climate, the heat that's down there in the summertime. You know, I was telling guys when I was in Dallas, teams routinely would bring their second team, their backup players. And, you know, I think I remember one year Toronto didn't bring theirs. I don't think they brought Giovinco. I don't think they started Bradley. Their DP guys just didn't even travel. So it was just like, you know, here you go. Almost like, here you guys go. Here are the points, Dallas. But I think, you know, fortunately or unfortunately, the weather here the past 2 weeks has truly replicated Dallas. And, you know, I think we've become acclimated to the heat. You know, unfortunate for people that, you know, don't really want that here. But for us, in terms of preparing for an FC Dallas game in Dallas, it couldn't have come at a better time. So I think, you know, that hopefully that negates things and it's truly a level playing field. But especially when I was at Dallas, that was what we looked forward to in the summer times, was just the extreme heat, knowing teams that they wouldn't be used to it. Of coming in from wherever you're flying in from, as soon as you step off the plane, the heat smacks you in the face. And I already know teams go in there thinking, oh, like we're playing, oh, like let's not even warm up a long time, you know. So hopefully, you know, we've been fortunate with this weather in terms of that's probably been the best scouting report for us, has been the high temperatures so far.
Honestly, I don't know if we've ever been there and not had a weather delay of like a couple hours with the thunderstorm, which I feel like you guys are also accustomed to. You played under Oscar Pereja and Luchi Gonzalez. How are they different and what can we expect to see from a Luchi Gonzalez? Just your time spent with him, and then also just obviously you guys have been scouting Dallas and watching tape and you've already faced him once this season.
Yeah, with the Luchi coach side, it's definitely they're building out of the back no matter what. So, you know, well, no matter how much pressure you put under them, they're going to continue to build out of the back. So that's going to be something that, you know, they'll try to play out of anything, which can be the detriment of them. And I think in the past, we've scored goals on just bad turnovers from them in the back. And then you're quickly going against, you know, their two center backs and in on goal. It looks nice when it works out, but you know it's tough when you're turning over the ball. So hopefully we can make them play faster than they want to, and we can, you know, get turnovers and easy looks at goals at the goal.
Okay, well, Jacora, listen, thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate it. Before we let you go, one final question for you: what is a good season for Minnesota United, and what is a good season for Jacora Hayes?
A good season for Minnesota United is, you know, making the playoffs and then winning the Western Conference. I think we were a step away last year, you know, really 15 minutes away, you know, and that's a hurdle that we want to get over, is winning a trophy and, you know, going on to the MLS Cup final and winning another trophy there, maybe doing a double. But I think a big goal for all of us in the locker room is winning a trophy. It's a special feeling. I've never done it at the professional level. So, you know, I'm just seeing what other people say. It's a magical feeling. So that's what we're all working hard for, is, you know, bring some silverware home. And then for me personally, yeah, we'll see. You'll see. You know, I'm pushing to be in the starting lineup, contribute as much as I can for this team. You know, I feel like if I contribute as well as I think I can, and we're winning games and we win a trophy, I count that as a successful season for myself as well. So I think the two go hand in hand.
Our thanks to Minnesota United midfielder Jacora Hayes, Kindred East St. Albans as always, and of course to you at home for listening. Thanks very much for your company. We'll see you Saturday when Minnesota United take on FC Dallas.